The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, this is Ben Wright Human, author of the webcomics Cospain and the Letters of the Devil, and you are listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 233. As it seems like I've been saying this for the last, month or so, I hope you're doing well. I hope you're safe and healthy, and I hope everybody that you care about is safe and healthy as well, as we are continuing to kind of push through this very difficult time in our nation's history. So I appreciate you joining me here on episode number 233, in which I have invited back the pro wrestling pundits, Ringside Rand and DJ Joey Blaze, to sit around and discuss some more topics related to professional wrestling. Now, just a few weeks ago, the three of us sat down and discussed the Mount Rushmore of professional wrestling and which male competitors, which female competitors, which managers, etc., should be on a Mount Rushmore of pro wrestling. And we've been thinking that there's a lot of other categories that we didn't cover in that first edition. So I asked them if they wanted to come back on. And to be honest, I didn't have to twist their arms because we're all sitting around the house not doing anything thanks to the quarantine. And but nonetheless, DJ Joey Blaze, Ringside Rand, and I are going to sit down and talk about some more categories in wrestling that definitely deserve a Mount Rushmore. So, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a lengthy episode, so I'm just going to do real quick two bits of business, if you will, and move on to our conversation. The first thing I want to mention real quick is that, you know, again, I know it's tough times right now, and you may not have a lot of disposable income. But if you do, and you want to pick up some great comics, you need to check out World's Greatest Comics. I mean, they're doing some great online auctions through eBay, and every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, they're doing a live Facebook auction through their Facebook page. All you have to do is search for WG Comics in the Facebook search engine. Their website is wgcomics.com, and eventually, maybe somewhere down the road, when you get the opportunity, you could stop by the store, in which they are located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. As I said on the last episode of this podcast, I appreciate Jeff so much, and the store is awesome. And, you know, they, much like many, many other small independent businesses, they need our help now more than ever. I also want to give a quick shout out to Redline Radio, where you can hear the PVD Cast every Monday night at 9:30. Redline Radio LLC on Facebook is where you have to go to watch the live broadcast on Monday nights. You can also listen through their website, redlineradiollc.com, and they have an app for Android phone users. All you have to do is go to, of course, the Google Play Store, type in Redline Radio LLC, and the app is like the third or fourth one down. Click it, install it, and you can take the station with you wherever you go, so you can hear all the great shows, all the great music. And, you know, I know you're probably saying, I'm an iPhone user, John. Well, that app is coming real, real soon. And definitely Redline Radio will let you know when it drops, so you too can enjoy all the greatness that is on Redline Radio. So without any further delay, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, DJ Joey Blaze, Ringside Rand, and I discuss another round of categories for the Mount Rushmore of professional wrestling. All right, ladies and gentlemen, joining me this evening is, of course, the pro wrestling pundits, DJ Joey Blaze. How are you this evening?
Well, if I was any better, I'd be twins.
And, of course, ringside Rand. Rand, how are you doing? Rand's got music again, apparently.
Life is good here in the Golden Ghetto, baby. Life is good.
All right. Well, let's explain a little bit of the background about this episode real quickly. Joey, you and I kind of came up and kicked this idea around a few weeks ago when we were talking about ring announcers, you know, the unfortunate death of Howard Finkel. We were talking about it and we said, you know, there was a lot of other categories that we could have talked about a couple of weeks ago when we did the Mount Rushmore episode where we talked about, you know, what male competitors, what female competitors, what managers, et cetera, could be on a Mount Rushmore. So you and I kicked this around, and so we decided we'd do another round of it with some new categories and one twist. And that twist is that we're not going to do any honorable mentions. I think that makes it incredibly tough now for us to really sit down and think to come up with the four individuals for each one of these categories. So there's a little bit of a background for the listeners there.
You mean the gentlemen? Often duplicated but never truly imitated? Is that how you say it? I don't know. Mount Rushmore idea that ran rampant through podcasts over the last month?
I was waiting for you to say that. I was waiting for you to jump in. Yeah, it seemed really weird that we did it a few weeks ago, and then it's got to be a coincidence. I mean, I'd love to think that I have that much stroke, but it's got to be just the mere coincidence that it seemed that after we recorded it and posted the last one, like, man, it was just seeming like everybody was talking about a Mount Rushmore of wrestling, like, everywhere, on Twitter, on Facebook, on other podcasts, et cetera, et cetera. So here are the categories. We're going to look at ring announcers, promoters or bookers. They're kind of the same in certain aspects, so we kind of group them together. Referees, enhancement talent, and most underrated. So those will be the categories that we're going to discuss here on this episode. And one final footnote, we've all agreed that when it comes to promoters and bookers, Vince McMahon is off the table. He is so impactful. He has made such a gigantic footprint in professional wrestling. He has his own damn mountain. So he doesn't get to be on a Mount Rushmore. He's heads and tails above everyone else. So he will not be mentioned in the promoters and bookers category.
I often used to say the same thing about the catering when we used to record these live together. But now there's no catering and I have to get my own coffee. So I don't like the footprint that that has left in my podcast life.
My catering is done by Captain Morgan.
All right, well, let's start off with ring announcers. And Rand, why don't you give us your four ring announcers for this category on a Mount Rushmore?
Well, I don't have the depth of knowledge that you guys might have on this. Mine's fairly mainstream and recognizable. I'm going with Howard Finkel, who in many ways started and created the industry. Lillian Garcia, personal favorite. Tony Chimmel. And I got to tell you, when he spoke, Michael Buffer, it was a big deal. I really liked Michael Buffer. He only did like one match, and you knew that when it was Michael Buffer time, it was big time.
Joey, your thoughts?
That's why I absolutely hate this motherfucker. I've never liked Michael Buffer. It's terrible. He got a paycheck to do the main. What a waste of money. He could have put that towards something else. Screw him.
Wow.
Now.
Okay. I have Michael Buffer on my list, too.
Oh, my Lord. Now, I agree, actually, with three of his four.
Okay.
I mean, you can't. You talk about big in pro wrestling. When your name gets announced as the new World Wrestling Federation champion, you knew that was a big deal when the Fink said it. The Fink is absolutely number one. I know it's not a ranking, but he's definitely up there.
I agree wholeheartedly.
For sure, because she trailblazed that. Now, we had Mike McGurk early on in the 80s. Which I was a mark for her, but she wasn't as big a deal as Lillian Garcia was and became. And she opened up the door for several other females to be ring announcers. And then I agree with Rand about Tony Chimmel. Tony Chimmel was the voice of SmackDown. And I absolutely had such a good time with him when I would sit ringside too, because he interacted a lot with the fans as well. And he was a huge fan favorite, whether it be, you know, the boys maybe messing with them and joking around with them, you know, doing some things, or just him just being himself. He added a little something extra when he did the ring announcing. Now, my fourth is because I was such a 605 on TBS mark, and I loved Clash of Champions, and I love when Tony Schiavone would throw it up to the ring and to Gary Michael Capetta. I've always been a fan of Gary Michael Capetta, and he's in my Mount Rushmore.
Well, I agree. Howard Finkel is number one on my list, and I wasn't surprised that all three of us had him. I agree with Rand. Michael Buffer, to me, yes, I could see the economics of Joey, what you're pointing out, but to me, that meant, holy shit, this match means something because they got Michael Buffer to do it. And he also had that iconic voice. And, you know, granted, you know, also did boxing as well, which is where he probably was most known for and most famous for doing boxing ring announcing. I still think he was integral in that, you know, late 90s WCW. I also have Gary Michael Capetta on the list because, again, also you're talking about somebody in WCW that had that certain je ne sais quoi about him. I put him on the list. I actually thought about Mike McGurk because I'm not sure if she was the very first female ring announcer, but as a kid, she was the one that I knew. But I did not put her on the list because I feel like Bobby Cruz from Ring of Honor, he's been there a very long time, like 16 years or something. And again, another guy that's got a unique sounding voice. He does a very good job. You know, he's part of the fabric of that company. So there you go. Bobby Cruz is my fourth one for my Mount Rushmore. Let's get ready to rumble! Rand's got all the music set to go, ladies and gentlemen. All the music.
You have everything at your disposal. He probably has Michael Buffer in his basement.
Rand, have you kidnapped Michael Buffer? True or false?
No.
All right, shall we move on to our next category, gentlemen?
Sure.
All right, referees, a job that is very important to a wrestling show. And throughout the years, there's been lots of referees. As a matter of fact, I kind of quipped the other day that it's this is a long story, but just seeing a little quarantine video, there seems like there's a lot of referees in the WWE right now, but I digress. Joey, who are your four referees that deserve to be on a Mount Rushmore?
Well, once again, as much as I love to think, and I know it's not a ranking, I have a huge man crush on a referee, and the one that recently released Michael, man, I had a sweet mullet in the 90s, Kyoto. Nick Patrick. I put the Hebners because they're kind of interchangeable. I know you're only allowed one. I put Earl, but I put the Hebners. I put Tommy Young in.
Well, first of all, the Hebners can go because even if you said we're going to put Dave in, Earl would sneak in there or vice versa. There'd be some twin magic switcheroo, so that's fine. Man, oh, man, you put Tommy Young in. Tommy Young was my number one. I love me some Tommy Young, man. There was just something about him, the way he slid across that canvas to get the one, the two, the three. He was just the man. I also had Nick Patrick. My, quote, WWE official, because maybe he was the first one that I really remember as a kid. Joey Morella, Gorilla Monsoon, was his father.
Adopted?
That's a good question.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure he was. Yeah, I think he was. Nonetheless, he was a great referee, man. He's a great referee. And my last one, and the reason he's on this list, was he had great reactions in a promotion where crazy shit happened. I'm talking about ECW's Jim Molyneux. I was always a fan of Jim Molyneux.
what was great about him is when he would overreact, when he'd slide in the ring or to make that pinfall, just there was so much pomp and circumstance behind him doing a three count.
Oh yeah. And his facials, like I can remember like somebody would do some outrageous shit and he would be in the ring and his facial expressions were like, oh my God, you know, like he had that look of just sheer amazement.
He definitely helped sell the story.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Rand, you're referees.
In some ways, you're not supposed to notice the referees. But we overlap a little bit, but not completely. I went with the multiple Hebners. I had Nick Patrick. I went a little bit further back with Dangerous Danny Davis.
I knew that was coming.
And the current, Charles Robinson.
Okay. Little Nate is a solid pick. I can go for that.
I know that he also runs the ring crew, that he helps build and tear down the equipment before and after the shows.
Well, I think all the WWE officials have to be part of the ring crew, I think. Joey, can you confirm or deny that?
I don't know. I think they have different jobs nowadays. I'm surprised. One that wasn't brought up was, I always forget his first name. I hate that I'm supposed to be on a podcast and know all this stuff. But Cone, what's Cone's first name, the ref of the WWE? David Cone? That's the pitcher.
I got to be honest. I'm going to have to Google that. I don't know who you're talking about, Joey. He's a current Don official?
Don Cone.
The name's not ringing a bell. I got to be honest, man.
Yeah, I'm surprised he brings in a lot of talent, and he's in charge of doing some off-the-wall type of things. And I think when you have these senior referees, I think they have different duties. Back in the day, they used to all be ring crew guys, but I think it's more like Charles Robinson. He oversees it. I'm sure somebody out there can clarify it for us, but I don't think they're all part of it like they used to be.
You know, one thing that, of course, Rand, you brought up about Joey Morella, we could talk about here with Nick Patrick, son of the assassin Jody Hamilton.
Yep.
Nice.
In fact, if you throw it out there on YouTube, you know, Nick Patrick actually was trained as a wrestler and was a mid-card to enhancement talent guy at Mid-South Wrestling for a number of years. I think he worked in Mid-South, like the Panhandle of Florida. That would have probably been the Fuller territory and all that jazz. But, yeah, he worked as a wrestler before he was a referee, which, I mean, I think that if you look at officials in professional wrestling, a lot of that happened where somebody was a referee, was a worker, was a wrestler, transitioned to being a referee for whatever reason, you know, and whatnot. I mean, we have it here, you know, with OCW's Bruce Gray for years was a referee and then became a wrestler. And so I don't think that's an uncommon thing, even in today's day and age.
I'll tell you one thing, too. Back, I would say, during the Attitude Era and a little bit after, we kind of had the golden age of referees, if you think about it. Because there were a lot of guys that came through that made names, like the Jimmy Corderas's, the Jack Doan's. Guys, if you could have a, you know, like an honorable mention that you would think about. I'm surprised none of us brought up Tim White, though.
I thought of Tim White, and I also thought of Harvey Whippleman.
Well, Tim White was on there for me. I crossed him out and went Tommy Young because Tim White was, you know, a very important cog in the machine when it came to having Andre the Giant there since he was his handler. So, and he did so much backstage besides be a ref. But ultimately, I had to go Tommy Young. So
and don't forget the Tiny Tap.
The Tiny Tap.
He owned the bar of the Tiny Tap.
That's the Friendly Tap.
I'm sorry.
The Friendly Tap. I've gone there once, and that's another story for another episode.
Fantastic.
It's quite a place. I'll just say that it's quite a place. Yeah. You know what, Joey, I never thought of Tim White, to be honest with you. I mean, I, you know, not that I forgot about him, but it never clicked in my head to think about him because he was there for a very long time, you know, much like Kyoto, much like Kadaris and a couple of those other guys. He'd been there for a long time. I just kind of totally forgot about him.
Or Teddy Long wasn't even talked about. And he came into WWE as a ref.
That's right. He was a ref. In fact, he was a ref a lot in NWA and Crockett Promotions because it was, you know, when Doom formed that he became. No, it was Skyscrapers before Doom, actually, I believe.
Correct.
Yeah, and he was their manager. And he was a ref prior to that. You know what? Real quickly, to wrap up with referees before we move on to our next one, I will tell you one that was not going to be on the list, and that was Bronco Lubitsch. Even though I'm the world class mark here, he was the drizzling shits when it came to refereeing. Okay. So old, I can't get down on my knees. I got to just get down on one knee. Sometimes he held on to the ropes while he got down on one knee. By the time he got down to make the count, hell, that was 3 seconds. The match should have been over. He was terrible. Enough on that rant.
That's a huge soapbox for you.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. But Bronco Lubic was terrible. He's awful. All right, let's move along into promoters or bookers, gentlemen. So as we all kind of talked, Vince is obviously would be taking up a spot on everybody's Mount Rushmore, and with his impact on the industry, he probably deserves to have his own mountain. So we were not going to include him, so we're going to be looking for some other promoters or bookers that were revolutionary during their particular reigns. So with that being said, Rand, let's start with you. Promoters and bookers on your Mount Rushmore.
One thing I thought of when I went through this is I don't think that any active wrestler should be a booker of the group he's in.
What do you mean by that?
I don't think people should be active wrestlers while they're booking the group that they're – the company that they're in. I think it's a conflict of interest.
Okay, I get you.
Having said that, you got to go with Dusty Rhodes.
Okay.
Kevin Sullivan, the Von Erichs, and number one for me was Paul Heyman in ECW.
Oh, okay. All right. I got to be honest. Did you say Fritz Von Erich? Did you say he was number two?
Yeah.
Okay. Fritz. Because shocking, Fritz is not on my list. Joey.
Wow.
What say you?
Double wow. That's crazy. I thought that would definitely be on your list. All right. So my like I said, it's just throwing them all out there because the ones I personally picked on my Mount Rushmore is I think outside of the Vin Man, these guys kind of shaped my fandom over the years with their promotions and guys that came through that they had an influence, I guess, on their careers. Paul Heyman is a course of mine. I'm total agreeance with Rand on that. But I did more the promoter side than the booker side. Because if we could talk bookers, you would say Dusty, Kevin. I get a lot of stuff. So I went more promoters, I guess, with mine. Although you used the term drizzling shits earlier. and he was at WCW when he was there. But where he came from, being Mid-South, Bill Watts is one of my top promoters. Another one, of course, because he brought so many guys to the limelight that ended up going to New York, Vern Gagne. And then my other, like, no particular order, is Jim Crockett Sr.
Those are all very solid picks. And Vern, that's a really good one because I don't think that sometimes people really realize, so to speak, that there's a ton of people that came through the AWA that made it big in the WWF, you know. The story goes that Vince had made an offer to buy the AWA and Vern said no. And that's why a lot of times when it came time for a talent raid, Vince was hell bent on going after AWA talent before anybody else. So that's a great pick. And Bill Watts, of course, you know, he certainly was an innovative booker, you know, in Mid-South, and his WCW run, from what I hear, Jim Herd screwed that all up. So, I mean, you know, that's partly not to blame for Bill Watts. It's partly because he had that moron to work with.
But if you think about it, so he did the same thing kind of that Gagne did. So Gagne, you know, he cultivated a lot of talent through AWA that Vince went after. And then Watts cultivated a lot of talent through Mid-South that both Vince and Crockett Promotions went after.
Sure. And they made absolutely.
And a lot of guys came through there that we're getting ready to see on Dark Side of the Ring on the UWF episode, you know, that there's some guys, there's some crossover with that. So that's why Bill Watts is in there. I'm not a huge fan of Bill Watts, but just because of the, you know, how it goes together with wrestlers' careers that had influence on my fandom.
Sure. And here's the thing with Bill Watts. Yes, he was controversial. Yes, people didn't get along with him. Yes, he may have been a bully. All of those things. But he put together some amazing programs. I mean, he's the one that gave the Midnight Express and Cornette their first big shot, you know, as a tag team. He's the one that really pushed for Terry Taylor to be the white meat baby face that all the girls love. He was the one that, you know, put together some amazing storylines. You know, much like many promoters, he put himself in the limelight every once in a while, you know. But one thing, you know, Joey, did you say that we're going to see something about UWF on Dark Side of the Ring?
Yeah, isn't that coming up? Isn't the UWF episode coming up?
Funny you mention that. It is tonight, but it's the Herb Abrams UWF. It's not the Bill Watts one.
Ah, a little confusion on my end.
Well, because here's the reason why. There's actually an absolutely sensible explanation. He never copyrighted Universal Wrestling Federation. Bill Watts never did. So when Abrams got the opportunity, you know, one night after probably lots of cocaine to start his promotion, he just used that name. I'm looking forward to that episode. I think that episode is going to be bonkers.
I totally agree.
Yes. Which, by the way, you know, since we're on that topic, you know, there was a guy that was running shows in Minnesota a few years ago using the AWA, and he got in trouble for that because he didn't have the copyright.
You might as well it's easier to beg for forgiveness, I guess, and ask for permission.
Yeah, he also was going by the name Dale Gagne, which was not his actual name, but. I mean, it's like Lance Von Erich's running his own promotion, you know. All right, my promoters and bookers. I agree with you guys, Paul Heyman. I think because, you know, let's be honest, he took a lot of people that maybe weren't the best wrestlers, and as we heard a million times, promoted their strengths, hid their weaknesses. And so you got to have a special knack in order to do that. So he was on my list. I put Jerry Jarrett on the list as one of mine. I think because he was...
I could definitely see that. I mean, that was... he had a huge influence on Southern wrestling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as a wrestler, and then as he became a promoter. And, you know, I just was listening to another podcast where they talked about how intelligent Jerry Jarrett was. For an example, in I think it was 81. In 81, they had only legitimately 8 main event talents because they were shifting people around. You know, they talked about how they matched everybody up. They had, you know, basically they had Lawler, Dundee, Mantell, and who was the fourth guy?
Was it Austin Idol?
Well, Idol was a heel, but yes, they had Idol, Dream Machine. I can't remember who the other two were, but all their mid card and underneath guys had been rotated out. Kern was coming in. Lane was coming in. Tojo was with on the other end of the territory, so it wasn't him, but it was another Japanese guy coming in. And like how they got away with just doing 3 months of television by working with just 8 people and just kind of working them in. Oh, Wayne Ferris was one of them. Wayne Ferris was one. Kevin Sullivan was the other one. He was another heel. Kevin Sullivan was in the territory. It was really, really interesting. So, and I mean, yeah, I loved whenever I could read in an aftermag about Memphis because it seemed like it was crazy as hell. And so Jerry Jarrett, definitely on the list. I did not have Fritz Von Erich. Go ahead.
You know what they said about Wayne Ferris?
What?
He's cool, he's cocky, and he's bad.
While Fritz Von Erich was not on my list, I put Gary Hart on the list. Gary Hart, for a couple of years, booked World Class, and he was the one that actually really kickstarted that promotion with the Freebird Von Erichs feud. He started that. Even after he left, after a pay dispute, and went to the Carolinas, I mean, that they just kept rolling with it, you know, the Von Erichs and the Freebirds. So I think if it wasn't for Gary Hart being involved in that early stages of World Class, it wouldn't have been the powerhouse that it is.
Little known fact about Gary Hart, he went on to be the manager of the Centerfold Club by the airport.
What?
The dude that worked there, on a side note, that ran that joint, looked just like Gary Hart. And I literally called him that every time. I'm not saying every time, like I was a frequent customer. But the few couple times that I may or may not have went in there, that's what I used to call him.
Well, you know, what else are you going to do when you have a five-hour layover to Denver? You know, you're going to go do what you got to do.
Go visit Gary Hart. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, go visit Gary Hart. He can tell you about how he used the straight razor to slice up the missing link. And my final promoter and booker, this one was a little bit of a stretch, but I went with Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert.
Ooh.
Because he booked a lot of Tri-State Wrestling, which was the precursor to ECW.
Right.
He booked a lot of Continental, you know, the panhandle with the Fuller and Welch. Granted, the company was on its ass anyways, but he still managed to get some cool storylines down there. You know, so I go with Eddie Gilbert on that one. And I always liked Eddie as a worker, too. So maybe that's where I'm a little bit biased. I don't know.
Long gone, well before his time, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Anybody that maybe we overlooked when it comes to bookers?
How about Jim Cornette?
Yeah, I mean, Smoky Mountain was awesome, dude. Definitely he could be in the conversation.
Well, there's a couple glaring ones to me. Now, if you're a wrestling historian, Sam Muchnick.
Yes.
For the wrestling historian, he's up there. I mean, that's an oldie but goodie. Vince Sr.
Mm-hmm.
No, but, you know, we didn't talk about him. And then if you think about somebody, because we talk about all these promoters that cultivated talent that, you know, shaped a lot of our minds in the wrestling that we grew up on, there's no Stu Hart. There's no a good chunk of wrestling history.
Yeah, there's no Hart Foundation, no British Bulldogs, no Bad News Brown, no Owen Hart, no Brian Pillman. The list goes on and on.
Now, here's one to throw out, too, not to interrupt, because Rand probably wants to get in there and say something, but what about Ted Turner? Would you consider him a promoter, or was he just an owner?
I consider him an owner. Rand, what say you?
I don't think he was involved with the operations much, but he will also tell you that the early days of WTBS, before it became TBS, when it was a local station in Georgia, that Braves Baseball and WCW and the Andy Griffith Show kept that channel on the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most definitely. You know, one thing, Joe, when you were saying that, you say, you know, a promoter that had a company that actually influenced our fandom. You know, another one to throw out there, even though it doesn't get a lot of love, Don Owen in Portland. I mean, if it wasn't for Portland wrestling, there'd be no Billy Jack Haynes, no Rowdy Roddy Piper, Playboy Buddy Rose.
Most importantly, no Buddy Rose.
That's right. That's right. I mean, that there's a lot of people. Kurt Hennig cut his teeth up there, you know, because Vern and Larry sent him out there to learn his craft before giving him any shot in the AWA. So, I mean, there's so many great promoters. I think, you know, that could be a whole episode of itself about some
what
other.
About, what about Mark Stone? What about Mark Stone? Would you throw
what about Mark Stone? Mark Stone of Fire and Ice Wrestling fame. That's right.
It's the Leaf, baby. Got to trust in the Leaf.
Inside jokes aside, before we move on to our final couple of categories, guys, I need to just let everybody know real quickly about World's Greatest Comics. And you know, if you listen to the last episode of this podcast, you know that Jeff is a good dude. He came on. He talked about how the coronavirus situation is impacting the comic book industry, his store, other stores, et cetera, et cetera. So I just want to remind you, I know you can't go to the store right now because of the stay-at-home order, at least for a few more days. But you could still help out the store. You could still buy some great comics. Check out their online auctions. They got a couple going on over at eBay right now. Every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock through their Facebook Live feed, they're doing these great auctions on some great books, some great toys, merchandise, et cetera, et cetera. So check them out. WGComics.com is the website. You can find them on Facebook. Just search for at WG Comics. And if you get a chance to help them out, you know, you got some money that you want to buy some cool comics, check out World's Greatest Comics. Appreciate them so much being a supporter. What are you playing? I can't even hear that.
Sorry, I was me cheering. I was clapping. I had to.
Oh, okay, I didn't know. I was like, what the hell is that?
We're normally in the usual studios, Franklin, that runs audio there. You just hit the button and the applause comes up and everybody, you know, claps. And I thought that would work and we couldn't hear it that well.
It's all right. So our next category is one that I think maybe needs a little bit of explanation. So we decided to try to come up with a Mount Rushmore of enhancement talent. And allow me to explain real quickly to the listeners at home that if you're unfamiliar with what enhancement talent is, it was the individuals who were booked to lose to the major stars on a wrestling show. It rarely happens anymore nowadays, but it was a staple of wrestling, especially in the TV product. This was a something that happened all the time. However, I don't know if you two will agree with me or not, but I felt like there was always two different layers or two different styles of enhancement talent. There were those that were, well, quite frankly, they were kind of believable. You thought maybe they could beat someone. And then you had the guys that you're like, there is no way they're going to beat anyone. And here's an example. I remember as a kid in the AWA, and I think he even worked some in Crockett, there was a jobber by the name of Arthur Washington. There was no way, looking at this guy who was gangly and had really bad tights that looked like they didn't fit him and had a really bad physique. Even as a kid, I was like, this dude's not winning a match. He is not going to beat beautiful Bobby Eaton. There's no way in hell. So what do you guys think? Did you oftentimes process that too, that there's two different levels of enhancement talent, or no?
I'll go first. Yeah, I do think there are two different levels. I think there are guys who are just punching bags and other guys who put on a good match. Dolph Ziggler started out as somebody who put on a good match, who made the other guy look good. And yeah, he's one of the few people that worked his way out of that lower level of jobbing. There are guys who are so low they're called carpenters, and there's not much to them. I think there's two different levels.
Much like Karen Carpenter, there was a lot of that special enhancement talent that made me want to throw up. So let's be honest about that, too. One of them that comes to mind is the Mulkey Brothers. Because when the Mulkey Brothers were coming out, you knew that other tag team was going to get a win. And it didn't matter who it was. It could be the most obscure two guys they put together. They're getting a win because they're fighting the Mulkeys.
Do I need to explain to the listeners who Karen Carpenter is? I mean that's a really dated pop culture reference.
Slightly dated reference, I know, but I'm old. Okay. That happen.
Hey, that's what Google's for, right?
Indeed.
Indeed. All right. So from my perspective, my list of enhancement talent, I'm sure you two are in the same boat. They were guys that were believable, that you might go, this guy might beat Wahoo McDaniel, maybe, you know, and maybe had a decent showing. And I assume that's what you two guys went with. So, Rand, let's not delay any further. Who is on your Mount Rushmore of enhancement talent?
I think everyone's going to agree with the Brooklyn Brawler. I have Barry Horowitz, and from WCW, or Georgia Championship Wrestling at the time, Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker, and Special Delivery Jones, who's probably best known for having an LJN figure that nobody ever remembers him wrestling. But do we remember the figure?
Wait a minute. I'm going to debate you on that one. I think more people remember the LJN SD Jones than the LJN Ted Arcidi.
Well, my point was, you saw the SD Jones and said, I don't remember him wrestling.
I loved the SD Jones LJN. I did. I loved it. As a kid, he was not an enhancement talent. He was mid card, baby.
I think there are two versions of that LJN, aren't there?
Yeah, there's a red shirt and then there's the Hawaiian shirt. I had the red shirt, or have. I shouldn't say had. I still have it.
Well, Joey Brooklyn Brawler, SD Jones, Barry Horowitz, and Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker.
All right, Joey, who are on your list?
Well, I got a couple that I'm in agreement with old Ringside Rand. Although SD Jones is a good one. I mean, he did have a small feud with King Kong Bundy that was on a WrestleMania, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, correct.
So I almost think look at him as maybe mid-card for a while at least, and then they really demoted him down there. And sometimes he liked to team up with one of the guys that's in my Mount Rushmore of Johnny Rods, Hall of Famer Johnny Rods. Mm-hmm. Also trainer of Taz, if I'm not mistaken. So Johnny Rods is definitely up there, and they did so well. He actually, the WWE put him in the Hall of Fame. I'm with the Brooklyn Brawler. I mean, Steve Lombardi even though he had a nice little run where he was managed by Bobby Heenan, he always did, with the lack of a better term, did his job well. Barry Horowitz, he's got to be on everybody's Mount Rushmore, of course. Then I picked Canada's greatest athlete,
Mike Sharp.
Iron Mike Sharp, as the other enhancement talent for my Mount Rushmore.
Nice. Real quickly, I just was looking this up while you were talking, Joey. So SD Jones went into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2019 as one of those legacy inductees. First of all, I think those legacy inductees are lame as shit, by the way. I'm just throwing that out there.
Oh, I agree, too. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, because there's no pomp and circumstance behind it. I mean, I found out that he was in it because I looked it up on my phone. So what kind of prestige is that to be in the Hall of Fame under a legacy, you know, when nobody knows? It's bullshit.
I'm pretty sure your boy Bruiser Brody's in there like that, too.
Yes, he is. Stupid.
So what's your name, John?
I agree with a lot of you guys. The Brooklyn Brawler, Steve Lombardi, was on my list, most definitely. Canada's greatest athlete, Iron Mike Sharp, was on my list. Special Delivery Jones was on my list. But I also, and I don't know why, but maybe because, again, as a kid, I looked at this guy and go, wow, he's a big dude, and he can actually move around the ring. My final inductee, if you will, the Italian Stallion from WCW, Jim Crockett Promotions era. I always kind of like believed that, and I know, you know, when we talked about, you know, these type of enhancement talents, that a lot of them got a little bit of a rub, you know, that they would be booked sometimes and get a victory, which to debate this among you guys, I feel that as a kid, I remember that it seemed like the WWF gave some of these enhancement guys a little bit of a win streak here and there, more so than Crockett Promotions. What do you think?
I don't know. I remember watching several times and watching the two enhancement talents wrestle. I can remember tuning into Clash of Champions and you would see two guys that are enhancement talents just so they could fill a spot on the card. But Italian Stallion, I myself kind of juggled that personally, just because no Italian Stallion, you have no R-Truth or no Hardy Boys. He was behind the training of those gentlemen.
Right. So, and I mean, George South was a consideration too, because if Ric Flair wants you as his job guy, so to speak, you know you're damn good. So.
And he's had lots of, much like Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker, he's had a lot of influence on other wrestlers in their training and doing well as moving on up the ladder too. And he's definitely now another one. I thought I almost put him on there, but I don't know if you would consider him enhancement talent, is Rip Rogers.
See, and that was the other thing that I was going to talk about, because I feel like, yeah, especially in the 80s, there was a lot of that where a guy was a mid-card dude, but he goes to a different company, a different promotion, and Rip Rogers is an example of it. You're absolutely right. I don't consider Rip Rogers to be enhancement talent because of his runs in Memphis and his runs in Continental. You know, I thought that he was kind of a solid upper mid-card guy. But I remember as a kid, I turned on WWF Wrestling and it was Ravishing Rick Rude versus Scott Casey. I'm like, wait a minute. Scott Casey was a main event guy in World Class. What the hell? You know, Sam Houston in the WWF was like a jobber. And it was like, wait, he was the former Mid-Atlantic heavyweight champion. You know what I mean? So I think there was a lot of that. Yeah, Bill Irwin. Exactly. Yeah.
But it's definitely a tough category because there's a lot of guys that, you know, were stars elsewhere, but I think the guys that we kind of covered, though, were mostly they did the job and they knew their spot in pro wrestling and they were okay with it. They were happy with it.
Yeah. Like I said, I think that, again, just from my personal opinion, I felt like the WWF, like I would turn on Primetime Wrestling and there would be SD Jones versus Tiger Chung Lee. And it would be like, well, okay, these two guys are going to go at it. You know, they would get a little bit of a victory there and move on. But I don't know. I kind of miss enhancement talent in wrestling. I think it's something that
they've always kind of been doing that lately to have, because they need people to wrestle during this crazy time.
True. So
they've been feeding some enhancement talent to wrestlers.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's something that needs to happen. I mean, that's how you build stars, is to have the Ultimate Warrior go out and destroy Rodney Smith. Okay. You know, that makes it believable. Rand, what's your thoughts?
Well, I just got this from research. We didn't mention the job squad, which was Al Snow, Buddy Holly, Scorpio, Dwayne Gill, and the Blue Meanie. But I think that you kind of see that now with this small roster that WWE's putting together. There are certain guys who are losing every week.
Yeah, and I don't – look, I'm going to disagree with the job squad too. I think those guys were not the type of – I mean, they're not enhancement talent. I don't. I know that they were losing quite a bit on Raw in the 90s.
Right.
But you're saying losing
on Raw is a big deal. To get to Raw is a big deal.
Right. Correct.
I think the only person who ever went from a jobber to a credible wrestler was Mick Foley.
Well, I don't know. I would, Joey, what do you say on that? I would disagree on that. I think that there's been plenty.
A lot of wrestlers start out as enhancement talent. It's amazing when you go back and watch. I was watching old Raw from the 90s, and Chris Kanyon was doing enhancement work for the WWE. I mean, he was enhancement in WCW till they realized how good of a hand he was and that he could go. You know, I think that kind of he might carry over into one of our other categories. I didn't mention him, but he might cut the next category we're going to talk about. But I think there's a fine line between enhancement and underrated, too.
Well, and Shawn Michaels. I mean, Shawn Michaels was an enhancement talent in world class in Mid-South. It wasn't until, you know, we'll say until he got to the AWA that he was, you know, considered to be something in the sport, you know? I think that that's the thing, and maybe that's the beauty of being enhancement talent. You can always move up. I mean, Roman Powers, the Young Stallions, there's a fine example too, you know, that those guys did some jobs.
The Hardys were first enhancement talent.
Who was that?
Were they called the Hardys, or did they have a different name? Weren't they Whisper in the Wind or something like that? The Willow?
No, that was his kind of his side gimmick and his crazy messed up world in his head. No, they were the Hardy Boys when they came, and they had those stupid patterned outfits, and they were like 17 and 18, and they were doing jobs in the WWE. So they started out, too. A lot of these guys started out as enhancement talent. Sexton Hardcastle was a jobber in WCW.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kane was in WCW. He was what, Bruiser Mastino or something like that?
Hell, Nash was.
Yeah. I mean.
Are you talking Vinny Vegas or What version Blaster of Nash?
The early Master Blaster version of Nash. That's all he did was job.
Joey, I'm surprised you didn't mention Jake the Milkman Millman.
That's a nice name as a blast from the past.
There you go. All right, we're moving on to our final category here, folks. And it is most underrated wrestler. And, you know, I think that as we're fans of the sport, we sat there and oftentimes probably played armchair booker and say, well, why didn't this guy get a bigger push? Or why doesn't this guy not get a good push? You know, he's terrible, blah, blah, blah. So these are the four individuals that we feel kind of didn't get the due that they deserve, all right, based on, you know, our fandom, based on their athletic ability, gimmick, whatever. So DJ Joey Blaze, let's start with you. Who is on your underrated Mount Rushmore?
Well, I just want to start out first, though. I think this was the toughest category out of the categories we did for Mount Rushmores.
Okay.
Just because this is personal fandom, I think. There's a lot more personal fandom with this than anything.
Sure.
Your taste in wrestling, your taste and who they are. So I did a lot of – it really racked my brain, and I just kind of thought, you know, I'm just going to kind of maybe pull back a little bit and think about guys that I was a fan of that you know, like you're just – the intro you just gave. So my – Mount Rushmore of underrated. I'm going to start off with a guy that's still wrestling. I brought him up in a chat today, and he was actually on Raw last night with Shelton Benjamin. I think he's such an underrated talent, and there's so much more I think they could do with him than they never have.
Okay.
Another one would be Bam Bam Bigelow. I mean, there's probably a lot of backstage politics and stuff why he never got his due, but I mean, he's arguably the best big man that's ever wrestled with athleticism and being the size he is. My next one, he's just such an amazing talent. And there's no, this guy trained Daniel Bryan. There's so many guys, I guess you could say, that he trained or was part of. You don't understand why he didn't have more of an influence or a better career. He trained CM Punk. He did stuff with Samoa Joe to help with him. And that's William Regal. William Regal was an amazing talent that never got his just due, in my opinion. And then my number one because he was always the Robin to Ric Flair's Batman, and he was always the number two, was the enforcer Arn Anderson. And that's my Mount Rushmore of underrated.
That's a lot to unpack. I need a minute. So, Ran, why don't we go to you and you give us yours?
I think there's some good work there. I think there's some good research. I think DJ Joey came strong. I agree with Shelton Benjamin. I think he can do so many things. And I think the same could be said for Aleister Black. I think this guy could be really something, but they just haven't found a way to use him, I guess. I'm going to add John Morrison to the list. And my personal favorite, a lot of people are going to have to look up, is going to be Vampiro.
Why Vampiro? That's an odd one. I didn't anticipate that one, Rand.
He's been a lot of different places.
Sure.
If you go back to the, he had a match with Sting, kind of like the Undertaker's match with AJ Styles, where they weren't in the building.
Okay.
I thought they could have done a lot with that character. I don't know if it's a backstage thing, but I had the chance to meet Ian, and he seemed like a great guy, and I just always kept my eye on him and thought he should have been a bigger deal than he became.
He had a very hard to find action figure too at one time.
Well, Rand, I think that the skinny on Vampiro is he's a difficult guy to deal with. I think that indeed was part of the issue with him. Okay, I totally agree, Joey. Arn, I think, doesn't get the due that he deserves. I agree with you with that. I think that that's changing because he's got the podcast now. I think people are really now figuring it out that he was amazing and definitely added something to the role that he had in Horseman.
He had so much influence on today's wrestlers. If you took a guy like him or Dean Malenko or both of them and put him in today's pro wrestling environment, could you imagine the matches he would put on today?
Mm-hmm.
Who were your four, Rand? Real quick, who were your four, though? You kind of agree, but you didn't say.
Shelton Benjamin, Vampiro, Aleister Black, and John Morrison.
Okay. I thought you might have just been comparing them, but okay. All right.
No.
I agree with Aleister Black. Joey, I don't know where you put Bam Bam Bigelow on there. I got to be honest with you. I think that one, I'm like, I don't think he was underrated, man.
He headlined to WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Well, a couple things with Bam Bam Bigelow. He was such an athlete, and he did so many different things. Like, he could, let's say if you wanted to take him, and he's another guy. I think he's a generational talent that you could put in. Can you imagine a match with him and Keith Lee?
Yeah, it would be amazing.
About that. And he had influence like that, but yet he never – what major title did he hold?
ECW World Championship.
Okay, his only accomplishment in the WWE was he was a Slammy Award winner. He couldn't have been a tag guy. He couldn't have been – I think he might have done something in one of the UWFs, but I just don't think he got his just due as far as throwing a strap on him or this, that, and the other. Now, a lot of people love him. I'm a huge Bam Bam Bigelow mark, but I just don't think that it was a big deal in WCW for a minute and the most, you know, towards the end, and then he wasn't, and this, that, and the other. And I just thought he was very underrated because he could do so many things. He could wrestle big, he could chain wrestle.
He was in a King of the Ring final against Bret Hart.
And he worked a lot over in Japan. You know, I think he was an IWGP tag champ, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, Joey, I just was surprised by that because I kind of think that he's not as underrated. You know, I think a lot of people have him on the radar. But again, yeah, I mean, solid pick. Shelton, I can see. Rand, I also would question Morrison, man. I don't know. You think he's underrated?
I think if they got him away from The Miz, he could be either an IC or a world champion.
Mm. Okay.
He's had both. He's had world titles. Wasn't he Impact champion, John?
He was Impact champion, correct?
And he had the ECW title. He's been IC title. He's been, I think, US title, numerous tech. He's had enough titles to where I don't think he's underrated. I think he's just rated just fine.
I agree. Okay. I agree.
I think he's fairly rated. Just because he's had his runs. I'm thinking of guys that didn't get their due. William Regal, whoop-de-doo, he had a TV title run. I think He's had a tag title. He might have had the IC title. I don't remember. I'm not a super historian about title reigns. But guys like that that should have got a world title that didn't. That you think about guys that got a world title and they didn't get one. That's where I kind of – that's one of the things I threw out there too, is guys that didn't get their just due. I know it's all work. We know that. But you usually throw a strap on a guy because they're – you know, you want to push them and they have it. They have it. All four of the guys I listed have it. But they never got their just due.
Well, I am going to go ahead and release mine, which this one, my number one, underrated. I've thought this for decades. I feel Brad Armstrong is the most underrated wrestler ever. Brad Armstrong could work. Brad Armstrong looked like a wrestler. The only thing he lacked, which I think is why he never got a run, was he couldn't talk. He had the worst promos, and why he never was paired up with like a valet that could talk for him or a manager that could talk for him is beyond me. Brad Armstrong was always a favorite of mine, and not like this stupid bad street or when he was a rat in a man, not that shit. I'm talking about straight up Brad Armstrong. I always thought crying shame that he never got a good push other than for the cruiserweight title.
Do you think maybe it's because he has such a basic look?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of people have said that. A lot of people have said that it was basically the personality. Like backstage, he was awesome. Like he was cutting up all the time and cracking jokes, but he just could never bring that. He could never bring that to the in front of the camera, and that I think that's why he never got, you know, a big serious push.
I think he had that Butch Reed problem too that we talked about before.
You mean with some supplements that might not be on the up and up? Is that what you're saying?
That might look white and powdery, yes.
Yes, uh-huh. We're not talking creatine.
No, not at all. I think that was one of the things that I have read stuff in the past that he had some issues with that. And matter of fact, I think he took some time off for rehab, if I'm not mistaken.
That's a good question. I'd have to research that, but that's one of my underrated. The next one. Exotic Adrian Street. I know what the gimmick was. The gimmick was he was the kind of the original Gold Dust, the effeminate, you know, not sure if he likes men, likes women, whatnot. But you watch matches with Adrian Street, that dude could bring that British style like Zack Sabre Jr. He was damn good in that ropes. And he had like the character too, that he could do the gaga. He could do the weird homophobic spots with his opponent. But he could also just go flat out 90 miles an hour, man. It'd be awesome, too. So he's on the list. This one is – it got a little bit of a footnote to it. Iceman King Parsons. And I say the footnote is fan favorite Iceman King Parsons. Parsons was a terrible heel. He sucked as a heel. Never liked him as a heel. But as a babyface, man, he was number two behind the Von Erichs. He would have the people out of his seat. He had the charisma. He had the dance moves. He had a pretty good wrestling ability. Iceman King Parsons, man, is somebody that more people should know about.
They love the booty bop.
They do. They do. And my last one is I just put him on here because of you and I, Joey, talked about this guy a lot in the last couple of weeks. And thanks to Instagram and the internet, I've been just fascinated by Playboy Buddy Rose. I mean, the mere fact that dude could wrestle and wasn't a body guy by any stretch of the imagination. Even in his younger days, granted he wasn't as chubby back, you know, in his younger days, but still the dude could go. And most recently, and this is why I was mentioning, Joey, I know I told you about it. I saw a clip of him playing hockey and the dude was damn good on scale. Like he was amazing. And I'm like, holy shit, this dude was a great worker. You know, maybe not the best interview, but he was a great worker. When he was a heel, he could get the heat like nobody's business. When he was a babyface in Portland, he could get the sympathy like nobody's business. And he's a hockey player on top of that, a damn good one. He's on the list, man. He's underrated too.
Here's a note I just got from research. Buddy Rose was in the WWF, put a mask on, was the executioner, and lost to Tito Santana in the opening match of the first WrestleMania.
Yeah. And something I learned, actually, Rand, something I learned, he actually had a run in the WWF earlier. He was one of the top contenders for Backlund early on in his reign.
I got a couple I want to throw out before we wrap everything out.
Okay.
And some might say that they got their just due, but it's the criteria that I've based off mine, I don't think so. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Lifelong babyface. Never got a world title run with the exception of the NWA title, but back then it was a top potato type of deal. I mean, he had his gimmick with Savage at Mania 3, but I think it's one of those guys that he could, if there was no Hogan in the WWE, I think that's somebody that could have carried the banner for a little bit. Nobody could work like Steamboat back then. And then another one I would throw out there that I had a tough time not putting in my top four, and I kind of mentioned him earlier, was Dean Malenko. Jesus, you talk about somebody that could work. Not only work, I mean, but the sad thing is he didn't have the personality to go with it. But his personality pissed me off, which made him a great heel because he was the Iceman. You know what I'm saying? He would beat up Rey Mysterio and this, that, and the other. And I had a little bit of a sliver of kayfabe in my eye, hoping that stuff was going a certain way, you know, and you root for him. You want to root for Rey. And Malenko was able to do that to make you hate him through his work because it was such good work.
Right. Not through his promos, but through his work. I agree. I disagree with Ricky Steamboat. I think he's right where he should be, like Morrison. He's, you know, right where he should be. I think most people look at him as being one of the greatest ever. I think he deserves that. But Malenko, I totally give that to you. I think he's very underrated.
But could you see, like, you know, he's going to bring up Steamboat in a time when that small post Hogan, when Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels guys were carrying the world title, Steamboat would have, you could plug him right in there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I could definitely see that. Rand, any closing thoughts as well from you or what?
I think we covered lots of things. I think we, I think the podcast listeners are going to get their money's worth this week.
They are. They certainly are. All right. Well, with that, we're getting up there to our time limit. So, gentlemen, let's wrap this up real quick. DJ Joey Blaze, where can people get in touch with you if they want to say, yes, you are correct on this, or no, you're not correct on this? Where can they find you?
One of the places, onlyfans.com/ Beaverless Joey, or you can reach me at DJ Joey Blaze on Twitter. Those are the two best ways to get a hold of me.
I'm telling you right now, when is this OnlyFans joke going to end? Because it's funny every single damn time we do it. Ah, it's got legs, man. It's got legs. Anyways, Rand, where can people find you on the internet?
In addition to the current Twitter under my name of Rand Dittmar, there is a construction of a YouTube page in the offing.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. What's going to be on that YouTube page?
Wade Bogg?
No, Wade Bogg is now not invited. I think the title is going to be Random Thoughts, and it could be it could be interesting. We'll see next couple of weeks.
Okay, I'm still laughing at the Wade Boggs. Very nicely done, Joey. That he slid that one in. Nice. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. DJ Joey Blaze, Ringside Rand, and yours truly sitting down and talking about more pro wrestling Mount Rushmore categories such as promoters and bookers, ring announcers, the most underrated, etc., etc. I hope you enjoyed our insights. I hope you enjoyed our opinions. And you can let me know. You can do that a couple different ways. First, you can find me on Twitter. My personal handle is @PVDMVP. You can leave me a message over on the Facebook page, that of course being facebook.com/PVDcast. Heck, you could shoot me an email. My email address, johnorlando@PVDcast.com. And you could probably even leave me a message over on the Instagram, that of course also @PVDcast. And don't forget, you can get this podcast a variety of different ways. You can get it at PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly, or through any major podcast platforms such as Spotify, Deezer, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, the iHeartRadio app, Radio.com app, Apple Podcasts, basically wherever you get your podcast from. If you want to find it, just search for PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put John Orlando after it, and you're sure to find it. And please, please rate, review, and subscribe as well. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the ratings, and of course, subscribing means you never miss an episode. And if you want, you can even check out the PVDcast on Redline Radio. Again, RedlineRadioLLC.com is their website. Search for them on Facebook. Just look for Redline Radio LLC. And if you're an Android user, just go over, download the app, and then you can take the station with you wherever you go. So three very easy, convenient ways to listen to all the great shows and music on Redline Radio. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. Thank you for listening. And I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy.